hit dirt. Ryan stood at the bottom of the rock face, looking up at the path he had created. Christy had already begun her descent, following his trail. She was swifter, having only to follow the path rather than create it. She set foot on the bottom and turned to the one-eyed warrior.
So far so good, lover.
Ryan nodded, watching Jack begin his descent. The rest of the companions followed in rapid succession. J.B. immediately took readings with his mini-sextant.
Well,
J.B. squinted at the sun.
Some old stamping ground. Not quite what they used to call New Mexico, but near enough. Kind of near to where they had that old fort, the Alamo?
The Alamo. Then we're in what used to be Texas.
Yeah, which I guess means it's gonna get hotter.
So we need to find some shelter, and soon. But where?
That was the big question. Ryan had felt less than optimistic as they set out away from the remains of the hillside where the redoubt's entrance had been situated. It could be that their explorations would turn up nothing of interest, yet their quest for a viable home compelled the companions to investigate every possibility in the area around the redoubts they jumped to. Ryan consulted the armorer about their position.
We face the hill, it's east. Away from it is west. The rest is easy enough to guess.
So, with a rough bearing and nothing in view of the horizon, the one-eyed warrior had to decide which way to lead his people.
Jack, you know the old New Mexico better than all of us. I guess that's the nearest point we've traveled before. Much chance of us hitting hospitable land within a few days?
Depend where we are now.
And we really don't want to be out in this any longer than need be.
Christy voiced all their thoughts as she gazed up toward the burning sun. Already, just standing in the glare, they were beginning to sweat valuable salt and water.
My dear Ryan, I know this is a far different land from the one in which I was raised, but I feel that perhaps you and the inestimable John Barrymore underestimate your own knowledge of the land. After all, you did spend a fair proportion of your youth traversing its length and breadth with Trader, did you not?
J.B. shook his head.
Trader went where the Jack was, which meant Ville's, right? These areas...
But surely you must have traveled across such areas in order to reach the areas of population.
I appreciate what you're saying, Doc, but J.B.'s right. Trader used to say that every stretch of land that was empty was another tank of gas wasted. He used other traders' mistakes, things he picked up in bars, to find ways to scout around areas like this and pick up Jack and Trade along the way.
Dean's brow furrowed.
Yeah, but if he knew to avoid the areas, he had to know where they were, so he must have had some kind of map.
Trader kept most things in his head. Made him more valuable to anyone alive than dead. The biggest jack of all is knowing, he said to me once. I didn't understand then, but now...
All of which gets us nowhere. Look, Dean's got a point. Did you ever trade in these areas?
Ryan and J.B. thought long and hard. Finally, the one-eyed warrior spoke.
Yeah, I see what you mean. J.B., can you give me a rough idea of how many miles to where Jack's old place is?
The armorer shrugged and took out his mini-sextant. Using the position of the sun, time of day, and his knowledge of prior readings in other places, J.B. calculated that the ranch Jack had briefly called home, before his wife and daughter were brutally slain and he rejoined the group, was some 6 days away in a southwesterly direction. Ryan greeted the knowledge with a grunt. He squinted his single piercing blue eye to the horizon in a southeastern direction.
I remember Trader taking us somewhere over there. I also remember from what he said that this is a fire-blasted big desert we've landed in. But I figure we should hit a group of hills about 3 days away. There are some old blacktops that still run through parts of here as well. If we hit one of those, we might hit an old gas station for shelter at night.
It's our best option.
Mildred fixed him with a stare.
John, it's our only option.
Afraid so. Either that or risk another jump.
Jack shook his head.
Not want to do that soon. Rather fry.
But there was no way he could have anticipated the intense heat of the day. It was the perpetual dilemma of traveling across scorched earth. Did they try to keep up a rapid pace, hoping that their water would see them through as they lost more water from exertion? Or did they keep to a slower pace and hope that they could fend off sunstroke at the height of the day? And then there were the nights. Desert nights could kill. They chilled to the bone and caused hypothermia to set in and take effect long before the morning sun could warm frozen flesh. In many ways, the nights were more dangerous, more insidious. During the days, temporary shelters could be constructed, any scrub used to give some kind of shade during rest periods. At first, the cool of the evening would be welcome, lulling the unsuspecting into a false sense of security before the bitter cold took hold. The scrub was even more vital at these times as a source of firewood. But there was little scrub and little chance of shelter. The chem-scoured and rad-blasted skies above them afforded no respite from the burning ultraviolet of the sun and the deep freeze of the moon. Time began to lose meaning, as there were no landmarks along the way, no visual relief from the unrelenting monotony of the desert, spreading all around in brownish-red dust that soaked up the rays of the sun and beat them back out. The heat burned the soles of their feet even through their heavy boots, radiating through the heavy clothes they used to cover the ground when they rested in whatever shade they could find or manufacture from their surroundings. JB had taken regular readings to try to keep them on track. It would have been too easy to end up wandering in circles in a place where there were few landmarks. They kept heading in the direction they had chosen, but by the time they reached the remains of the road, even Ryan began to wonder if somehow they had wandered off track and would end up frying in the desert dirt. Doc was the worst hit. His time-trawl-ravaged body needed water at regular intervals, intervals that began to grow shorter with even greater regularity. He began to lean heavily on the lion's head swordstick that also doubled as a cane, and Dean hung back to aid him.
"Don't worry, Doc. It'll soon be better."
Doc's answer chilled him.
"Julian, you've come back to me at last. How is my dear Emily? And Rachel, is my hell finally over?"
Dean didn't know what to say, but his eye met Mildred's, and he could see that the woman was concerned. In ordinary circumstances, the water supplies they had taken from the redoubt would have lasted them more than a week. But here, the sun was hotter, the lack of cloud cover, and the way in which the baking earth absorbed, then released the heat, made the journey almost intolerable. Even when they stopped and tried to raise some kind of rudimentary shelter, it was impossible to escape the heat. All the companions were sweating out more water and salt than they could afford to lose, and when the cold night drew in, they huddled around the small fires they could build and filled up on the self-heats. As most of these were soup or stew-based foods, they supplied some more water for the dehydrated bodies, as well as supplementing the salt tablets that Mildred had plundered from the medical stores. So the road, when it finally appeared, was met with a sense of elation, although all were too hot and exhausted to express this in any other way than a massed sigh of relief. However, it came with the uneasy knowledge that even though they had reached the road Ryan had gambled upon, there was still the dilemma of choosing which way to follow the cracked blacktop. The shimmering surface of the road, the aged macadam almost melting in the intense heat, was visible from a few hundred yards away, and the companions exchanged glances as they, as one, noted the landmark for which they had been searching. They were too exhausted to speak until they had tramped the last few yards to the edge of the road, where they drew to a halt.
Why don't I feel excited that we're actually here?
Christie's sweat-plastered red hair clung to her head, the long ends clinging like tendrils to her neck and shoulders. Her fine skin was covered with a layer of dust, and her cracked lips told of the effort to conserve the rapidly shrinking water supply.
"Because this is still only the beginning. First we work out which way to go, and then we hope we hit some kind of old wag stop, or maybe a vill if we're lucky."
Mildred turned her head slowly, sun-blasted muscles aching, to survey the long blank stretch of the road in each direction.
"I think we've got a better chance of a wag stop. Who the hell could keep a vill going out here?"
Dean shrugged, following Mildred's stare.
"Maybe just over the horizon."
JB said nothing. He took out his mini-sextant and took a reading to confirm their position, then extrapolated from it an overall direction for the road.
"I'd say that we head due west from here, following the road. I'd reckon that going east just leads us back."
"Yes. If I remember right, then there were some vills headed that way. We should rest up a few minutes, maybe take some water and a salt tablet, then head that way."
Ryan lifted his arm to indicate a westerly direction. Even lifting made the muscles ache. In his dehydrated state, the buildup of lactic acid was unable to dissipate. His skin was burning, but covering up made him sweat too much, losing more fluid and salt. Like all of them, he was trying to balance perspiration with the dangers of sunburn and sunstroke. But it was Jack who was having the greatest problem. As an